Good morning, it's 9:30. On Wednesday, the 11th day of June, and my name is Mark DeGroft. I'm going to be reading the Green Valley News to you this morning. Hey, let's see, looking at sunny skies today, high 102 degrees, winds out of the west-northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, clear skies, low of 72, winds out of the southwest at 10 to 15. And tomorrow, sunny with a high of 103, winds out of the southwest at 10 to 15. 102 today for our high, abundant sunshine, highs 100 to 104 and lows in the 70s. Humidity currently 22%, cloud coverage 4%. Wind is out of the west-northwest at 11 miles per hour. No rain in the forecast today. And the sun rise this morning at 05:17 and will set at about 7:30 tonight. Currently 82 degrees in the Suarita Green Valley area. Okay, taking a look at what's happening in our world, a former county Pima County supervisor and a member of the Pima Community College Board was cited on two counts of assault in connection with the University of Arizona basketball game in February that erupted into chaos in the closing seconds. Sylvia M. Lee was also banned from all U of A property until February 24th of 2026, this according to the University of Arizona, and has been banned from all U of A sporting events, although the university did not indicate for how long. Brigham Young University upset the 19th-ranked Wildcats 96-95 in a wild game on February 22nd that ended after a controversial foul call gave the Cougars two free throws that clinched the win. Fans, already on their feet and booing, lashed out while players from both teams had to be separated with tempers flaring. Some fans launched into a derogatory chant aimed at BYU players and the faith-based Mormon school. After negative national attention, Arizona Athletic Director Desiree Reed-Francois issued an apology saying, "The chant is not reflective of who we are and should not have happened." According to a University of Arizona police report, Lee was in the McHale Center stands that evening and threw a drink onto the court shortly after the game ended. An officer saw the drink toss but didn't see who threw it. As he headed toward that area, a fan pointed out a woman in red who was heading up the stairs. Given the large crowd most fans were wearing red, the officer lost track of the woman, according to the report. And then the officer returned courtside and discovered three employees had been hit with the contents of the cup and two agreed to pursue charges. Lee was identified a day later based on video footage and her seat assignment at the McHale Center. Her motor vehicle department license photo matched the person in the video, according to police. When contacted by police 2 days after the game, Lee said she spilled her cup after slipping on popcorn and soda. She did not intentionally throw it, she said. She said everybody was pointing at her, so she ran out of there, according to the police report. Police told Lee that video did not back up her story. She agreed to come to the U of A police station and was cited and released on two counts of assault with no injury. Lee also has issued an exclusionary order which bars individuals from U of A property for 6 months to a year. Lee's order ends on February 24th, 26, and her photo and information is listed among 181 people with exclusionary orders on a U of A website. Lee gave a different account of that evening to the Green Valley News on Tuesday. Quote, "One of the BYU players did an obscene gesture at the end of the game to my daughter and I threw the remains of my ice at him and missed and hit the coach," Lee said. She later added she wasn't sure if it was a coach, but that somebody on the court was hit by ice and melted ice. Lee, who has second row season tickets, didn't mention slipping, nor did she explain why she didn't tell police officers about the obscene gesture. "I would never do it again, but it was a spur-of-the-moment reaction to this obscene gesture he was making to my daughter. Frankly, I did not think it was a big deal, but I guess you can't do that. You're not supposed to do it. I get it. She sent a letter of apology to the athletic director at BYU. No charges had been filed in the case, and the Tucson City Prosecutor's Office did not respond to an email and phone call on Tuesday asking about the status of the case. Lee told a reporter the case had been dismissed. Lee was elected to the Pima County College Governing Board in 2012 and served through 2018, including a stint as the chair. She also worked as a PCC campus president and dean from 1996 to 2011, and she has lent support to several groups and causes here in Southern Arizona. Lee, who's a Democrat, was appointed to the Pima County Board of Supervisors in December of 2023 to finish the last year of Sharon Bronson's term. Lee, among eight applicants for the position, did not run for the seat in 2024. Well, 18 years after volunteers formed Median Green to beautify Green Valley's 110 medians, the nonprofit is no more. The Green Valley Council Foundation disbanded the group after its coordinator, Ruth Taminga, resigned on February 26, and there is nobody to take it over, Foundation President Mari Nelson said in a brief interview on Thursday. The foundation removed the 265-gallon cisterns used to water newly plant vegetation and is selling them, and the news came as a surprise to Chuck Parsons, who is the president of Green Valley Gardeners. Last August, Taminga contacted Parsons and Green Valley Gardeners volunteer Jean Van Dyken because she felt many of Green Valley's medians showed signs of neglect. Taminga asked to brainstorm ideas with Parsons and Van Dyken, who also heads up the Green Valley Litter Patrol. Pima County officials had told Taminga it wasn't the county's job to beautify the medians, and county contractors hadn't been seen in months. The trio decided to use their limited funds to hire two landscaping firms and solicit donations for more landscaping hours. Green Valley residents rallied and donated more than $5,000 through the GVC Foundation. The landscapers were hired, and a couple of months later, Parsons and the Green Valley Gardeners entered into a three-month agreement with the foundation to continue working on the medians after the funds were nearing depletion. Parsons said he was in the middle of negotiating with the foundation to extend that agreement when he discovered Median Greens no longer exists. He said he had met with Valletta Canouts before she was replaced by Nelson as foundation president in February. He said that he left that meeting puzzled. I asked three times. I said, "So what do you feel you got out of our agreement?" And I never did get an answer, Parsons said. Nobody said, "Gee, you saved our bacon," or anything like that. There was no, "We wouldn't have been able to fulfill the agreement of the license with the county if you hadn't stepped in," or "Gene and Ruth are doing a fabulous job." Nothing like that. It was just really bizarre. So I left the meeting and not feeling like we even got to discussion of how do we make the agreement better. Parsons said they had proposed one change to the agreement with the foundation in hopes of avoiding a 10% administrative fee on donations. "We said we're interested in continuing, and here's how we would change the language. If donations were made for median work by the public, we'd put it into an account that was restricted, and Gene and Ruth would have visibility on how much money was there, and we would give Median Green a monthly report." We never heard back on that written language. The first thing I heard back from Median Green was that they were disbanding their nonprofit fundraising. And then Ruth was notified that they were disbanding Median Green altogether, Parsons said. He said he also wanted to change the language because volunteers with Median Green and Green Valley Gardeners were frustrated they weren't getting answers as to where the donations were going. "I could see their frustration personally, and I could understand they were working really hard to get people to make donations and then not really knowing how much money was sitting there available for them to use," Parsons said. "Whenever there's a fundraiser, people want to know that night, how did we do? You got to have that information available to volunteers. They won't stay on board if they're frustrated." Canouts said yesterday that she had no comment. Van Dyken said he has long had questions about Median Green's finances. At the start of January 2024, there was around $24,000 in that account, and then a lot of it just disappeared. "I think what happened was it moved over to a general fund for administrative costs to support GVC and the GVC Foundation," I'm thinking, I don't know, Van Dyken said. He did say the account went from $24,000 in January to $9,000 in September. That's when he asked for the funds to hire the landscaping firms and was given $7,000. Van Dyken said he was told the remaining $2,000 left in the meeting account will go to administrative costs and a storage unit. Nelson and Green Valley Council President Debbie Kenyon were emailed a lengthy list of questions late on Thursday. Kenyon responded via email on Monday, "This has nothing to do with the Green Valley Council," in quotes. Nelson, who cut short an interview with a reporter Thursday, didn't respond to a follow-up email. The Green Valley News was told on Monday that she is on vacation and unreachable. Kenyon and Nelson were asked why Green Valley's gardener's proposal was rejected. If attempts have been made to replace Tamiya, and what will happen to any remaining median green funds? They were also asked for the latest annual report filed with the Internal Revenue Service. Parsons said the Green Valley Gardeners has asked Pima County if they can take over the right-of-way encroachment license that Median Green obtained in order to beautify the medians. Pima County officials said on Thursday in an email to the Green Valley News they just received the request and that they couldn't comment. Nelson and Kenyon were also asked if they would recommend the gardeners to the county. In the meantime, Parsons said they would be loaning one cistern to an HOA, which lost its cistern 8 months earlier than expected when the encroachment license with the county was lost when Median Green disbanded. If Pima County gives the GV gardeners the lease, Parsons said they want to go back to the business and the HOAs that adopted medians back in 2007 to see if they could put dollars aside for the median's upkeep. They'll also continue to seek donations from residents. If they can't get the license, Parsons said the county will only tend to the medians if the vegetation becomes a safety hazard. In other words, if it falls into the roadway or obstructs any driver's sight. But we want our medians to look better than that, he said, and maintaining their high standard will likely cost between $20,000 and $25 a year, according to Parsons. It's 9:43 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Local groups planning to join nationwide protests against the Trump administration say they aren't dissuaded by the federal action in Los Angeles, but the heat has led to an adjustment. The Green Valley Democrats and the Green Valley Suarita chapter of We the People Are Indivisible plan to join nationwide No King's Day protests on Saturday. The nationwide protests coincide with a national celebration in Washington, D.C. for the Army's 250th anniversary that it includes a parade with about 50 aircraft, 130 military vehicles, and 7,000 marching soldiers. That date is also Flag Day and Trump's 79th birthday. Indivisible funds to march from Suarita Town Hall to the corner of Suarita Road and Rancho Suarita Boulevard beginning at 8 o'clock a.m. Local organizer John Boulette said the group will demonstrate on all four corners for about an hour and then march back to the town hall. The GV Democrats also plans its hours-long demonstration at 8 a.m. Saturday at La Cañada Drive and Esperanza Boulevard. Boulet said he sympathizes with protesters in Los Angeles, but doesn't see any need to make changes in their demonstration because of it. Anti-ICE protests that began last week in L.A. have led to clashes with local law enforcement, and Trump bypassing California Governor Gavin Newsom and Mayor Karen Bass to send more than 4,000 National Guard troops and 700 active-duty Marines to the city. The protests were confined to a small portion of the metropolitan area, primarily downtown and the city of Paramount. "We're totally non-confrontational and hope that everybody in our group will remain so," Boulette said. He said the goal for Saturday's protest is to bring attention to the federal government's actions since Trump began his second term in January. "If anything, it's magnified that the federal government can just sort of meddle or just go into any state and do whatever pleases," Boulet said, noting Newsom and Bass's objections. "Our goal is just to make people aware. I think ours is a big goal, awareness." In Green Valley, GV Democrats President Sandy Stone said they don't see any need to make changes in response to what's happening in California. She said they have occasional run-ins with Republican counter-protesters, but she doesn't think it'll be any different than it typically is during Saturday's demonstrations. Stone expects a good turnout. Some of their protests this year have drawn several hundred people. She said several people have come into the group's headquarters Tuesday to buy flags, signs, or just inquire about Saturday's demonstration. Christy Munn, who is 56, moved to Green Valley about 2 weeks ago, joined the GV Democrats on Tuesday on a work break. Saturday will be her first demonstration with the group. I just wanted to come in here first and get the skinny on it before I decided to participate. I wanted to make sure that I knew everybody, Munn said. Munn has been to protests before, including the first women's march in Washington, D.C. during Trump's first term. She said Los Angeles was in response to ICE actions, and she could see more uprising down the road as they increased, accompanied by more efforts to tamp them down. But Munn isn't worried about an impact in Green Valley or Suarita and isn't dissuaded from continuing the protest. I am worried for the bigger cities, she said, adding that she thinks the federal actions are more about creating distractions. Now, the biggest concerns leading to the changes with both groups is southern Arizona's rising temperatures throughout the week, leading to the National Weather Service expecting a 108-degree high on Sunday. The Weather Service also issued an extreme heat watch on Tuesday for Saturday morning through Monday evening. Goulet hoped having the demonstration and march in an early morning was enough of a heat mitigation to see more participation. Stone said they also planned out volunteers in orange vests in case of heat-related emergencies and have advised people to keep hydrated and will have water available. Goulet said they also advised people to bring their hats, sunscreen, and wear appropriate attire for the heat and plenty of water, he said. It'll be a short march from the down hall to that Fry's intersection. It's just about a half mile. 9:48. A 72-year-old Green Valley man is recovering after he was bitten on both ankles by a rattlesnake while walking in the dark on Monday night. According to the Santa Rita Fire District, the man was several hundred feet from his residence on South Placita Prosperidad when he felt a sudden bite on each ankle and then heard the rattlesnake's rattle. The man was able to walk home, called 911. He was taken to Banner University Medical Center by fire crews. Residents are reminded to exercise caution when walking outdoors and to never place your hands into spaces that you can't see. Rattlesnakes are often attracted to the heat of the rural roads and can be seen soaking up the warmth on these roads when the weather is hot. Well, 3 years ago, when Piper the Terrier went missing for 2 months in the community, Vicki Jackson joined a community-wide search and helped set up the humane trap that captured her. The retired administrative assistants then fostered her until she was adopted. This time around, when her friend Billie Joe Christensen told her in late May that people were needed to take in a Tucson murder victim's 24 puppies and their mothers, Jackson immediately offered to help. Jackson took in 9 puppies and a Labrador mix she named Tess, who was nursing them. When she and Christensen realized Tess wasn't producing enough milk, Jackson took in another nursing mother, a staghound, that they named Betsy. Another Green Valley woman, Gail Mahler, took in 4 puppies. The remaining mom and other puppies were taken in by Tucson residents. Nearly all of Jackson's living room are now taken up by a corral made up of toddler fencing on top of a tarp. Sophie, Lucy, Augie, Tilly, Ozzy, Bo, Stella, Dolly, and Blue live in the center with frequent visits from Betsy and Tess. When they aren't sleeping, the puppies, who are believed to be 4 and 5 weeks old, tug around plushies and jump all over each other. The first days were hectic because the dogs weren't found until a couple of days after Randy Schultz, who was 59, was shot to death. The three moms were emaciated and the puppies were in bad shape. They thought they were going to lose one of the puppies. He was very lethargic and not wanting to eat from mom, not wanting to drink, so we sponge-fed him and gave him puppy formula for a little bit, and he perked right up, Christensen said. All of the dogs had diarrhea, and Betsy and Tess were scared, Jackson said. She put a GPS tracker on Tess and an Apple AirTag on Betsy, terrified that they had run away. For 10 days, I would take them in and out and whenever I thought they had to go potty, Jackson said. I even had the leash on them first so I could grab it and go outside. And now they're settling in and getting comfortable and really coming around. Over time, Christensen has become familiar with several animal rescue groups and soon began to foster for them as well. Far too often, irresponsible pet owners and unscrupulous dog breeders come to Green Valley and dump litters of puppies that they can't sell. They leave them at Walmart near the historic Canoa Ranch, along the Madera Canyon Road, on Delgado Road in Sorita Heights, and near San Javier del Bac Mission, she said. Christensen said that she, Mahler, and Jackson became friends rescuing dogs, and although they weren't a big dog rescue organization in any formal sense, they all do what they came in had to do when it comes to animal welfare. Christian said she's fostered dogs sick with parvovirus, that is, distemper and giardia, and paid for their care when the animal rescue groups haven't been able to help out. I've always loved animals, and it's just been like a calling. I've always had this urge every time somebody says something about an animal in need or whatever. It pulls at my heartstrings, and I just can't walk away, Christensen said. Over the last month, she's fostered 28 puppies and 6 adult dogs, easily spending $1,000 for litter and supplies, Christensen said. And when Christensen learned that Mahler and Jackson were taking in Schultz's dogs, she dropped off everything they need until the puppies are weaned and can be adopted out. When Christensen, Jackson didn't hesitate when she found the puppies needed a temporary home. It's in my heart. They don't have anybody to look out for them, and someone has to do so. The nonprofit also agreed to have Betsy and Tess checked out. That's especially good news because, as it turns out, Tess wasn't producing enough milk for Schultz's puppies because she wasn't their mother, and she's about to give birth to her own litter, Christensen said. Christensen, who's moving back to Michigan soon, and Jackson said they plan to continue the work as long as they're able. Jackson said she loved the name of the animal rescue group that she volunteered with in Minnesota. It was called the Thief River Falls Paws, which stood for Pets Are Worth Saving. 9:53 and change. Sorita High School graduate Tyler Rushing, at 18 years old, is the youngest member of the Green Valley Sorita Chamber of Commerce after launching his photography and videography business, TLR Media. Rushing was looking for a creative outlet when he turned to photography in 2020. He enjoyed art, but says he wasn't very good at it, but photography clicked. I love the ability to capture things the way you see it and then show it to others, he said. Teachers Luis Aravello and Derek Marshall mentored Rushing through high school, including basics like framing images. Marshall taught me how, if there's a lot of action in a photo, then give the full frame of the subject, Rushing said. Narrow your focus where you want it. Aravello taught Rushing how to make photos look better in post-production and how to take better photos to avoid relying on editing software. Rushing had always wanted a photography business but felt like it was unreachable until he went out job hunting. During the search, he came across the Green Valley Sorita Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center. We saw the Chamber of Commerce building. We went in and sat down with Mia Brown and had a really nice talk with her and ended up starting the membership then, Rushing said. I guess you could say it was kind of like on the spur of the moment, but actually I've been waiting for a while. I kind of thought about it more and more, and I was like, I want to do this for a living. I'd love this to be my full-time job. Less than a month out of high school, Rushing became the youngest member of the chamber. He said transitioning his train of thought has been difficult. You do this for 13 years, from kindergarten to 12th grade. You have your schedule laid out for you. You have people tell you this plus this equals this. And now I have to come up with what this is and what this is and what it will be equaling. Rushing's message to people his age is that you have a dream, and if you can find a way to pursue it, go ahead and do it. You're young and you have the time to make mistakes. If I mess up here, it's not going to affect me 20, 30 years in the future. So it's like, why not give it a shot? I do intend on trying to do both things, going to school and getting an HVAC certificate. I have a backup plan, but also a lot of other opportunities lined up. If he doesn't go to Pima College, he has an opportunity to apply for Green Valley Heating and Cooling's training program. For now, Rushing is looking for clients, is open to doing any kind of photography from real estate to events and portraits. I'm looking forward to an opportunity of being able to live off my passion and say that I've never worked a day in my life because I love what I am doing. Riley Aramias, that is, a Walnut Grove High School Class of 2025 Cross Country and Track and Field standout, has signed with Portland State University. Aramias finished 19th at the AIA State Cross Country Championships in November and qualified for the 400-meter dash, the 800-meter dash, and the 4x100-meter relay at the AIA Track and Field State Championships in May. Suarita High School softball's Eliana Romero earned first term in 4A All-Conference honors, recognizing the best 4A softballs in the state. Jade Villa earned second team honors for the Mustangs. And Natalie Holzer and Maddie Holzer of Walden Grove High School earned second team 4A All-Conference honors. And Walden Grove High School girls soccer hosted its first soccer camp for boys and girls aged 5 through 14 on June 3rd through the 6th. The girls' coaching staff provided speed, agility, and technical training alongside the girls' soccer team at the camp, and it was organized by the Walden Grove High School Soccer Booster Club. And Suarita High School girls wrestling traveled to Arizona College Prep High School in Chandler last weekend to compete in the summer's Girl Jamboree, and Amaris Aguiar was named Outstanding Wrestler. And really briefly, a Suarita officer helped someone change a tire on East Puente de la Lluvia. And Suarita officers, at the behest of a concerned mom, spoke to a child to help in motivating them to make good choices in life so that they could achieve their goals and be successful. On June 5th, a North Cobalt Drive resident visited the sheriff's substation to report that somebody had hacked into her cell phone because she couldn't call a family member. Deputies troubleshooted the phone, didn't find any problems. On June 6th, a North Cactus Lane resident called the sheriff's department after their neighbor pepper sprayed his dog after it got loose. Deputies went to speak with the neighbor, but the dog owner had pointed out the wrong house. An agitated woman went to the Santa Rita Fire Station on Continental Road because she couldn't find her husband, who had been taken to a hospital. Deputies and SRFD crews provided her with resources. And a West Camino Alameda resident called the sheriff's department to complain about a neighbor repeatedly coming to her window and calling her names. Deputies found no evidence of a crime. And lastly, the sheriff's department received a call from someone whose diamond and sapphire ring had been stolen. They also identified a possible suspect. And a West San Ignacio resident called the sheriff's department to tell them her son had stolen her vehicle. A West Aliso Drive resident called the sheriff's department after seeing somebody inside a vacant home. It was the homeowner. That takes care of the reading of the Green Valley News for this Wednesday. Mark DeGroft with you. Thanks for joining me. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Just left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio. And then under Programming Links, left-click on On-Demand Podcasts. And you can listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or any other smart device. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful day. See you next Wednesday.